pretend to describe 20 different versions of her imagined mate in the most dramatic ways possible had worn on her patience. She knocked on the door, and Easton opened it a few seconds later, casting his eyes over her outfit before giving her a nod and standing aside for her to enter. She had managed to keep most of her tights and leotards, since she had plenty of black pairs, and had salvaged enough of her normal clothes to last her until summer break. She had also miraculously saved all of Killian's shirts, since they had been in her laundry bag when the blood balloons exploded.
"Start on the treadmill," Easton instructed, and she headed over gratefully as he stopped to talk to Moses.
A quick survey of the room showed her that the rest of the alphas were already there. They were hanging about, mostly, like they had been discussing something, but now they were starting to break apart and get into their individual activities. Isabel didn't want to engage with anyone, so she kept her focus on the treadmill, pressing the speed higher and higher until it felt like her muscles were rubber bands pulled taut, ready to snap. It was Theodore who leaned over her from the treadmill beside hers, punching the numbers down. He didn't scowl or try to reprimand her, though. He just went back to running, his stare blank as it met hers in the mirror. And then he smiled. The smile she really liked. The one that made him look like a superstar. The one that pulled his skin tight around all the angular planes of his face, creating a shifting picture she could probably watch for hours without getting bored. The one that took her breath away. Some of the desperation edged out of her, and she relaxed enough to give him a shaky smile in return. The rest of the group session passed like a well-choreographed dance. The alphas skirted around her, and she skirted around them, neither of them offering more than a muttered word or a quick, furtive glance. With the exception of Easton. By the time the lesson was finished, she felt like she was actually getting worse at singing. But her skill was the least of her worries, because as intimidating as being in a shared class with all the alpha students was, it wasn't anywhere near as terrifying as the idea of a private lesson with just one of the alpha professors. She was too nervous to eat much during the morning break, and she blundered her way through her first dance class for the day, barely even noticing that Reed sat in the back of the room after he turned up out of nowhere, telling the professor that he had just transferred into the class and wanted to observe the first lesson. He slipped out before the class actually finished, and she checked the location of the practice room for the tutoring session with West at least 6 times on her way to the music department. She raised her hand to knock on the door when she found it, but it swung open before she could touch the wood.
"Right on time,"
West noted, his deep voice rolling over her. He stood aside, catching her bag by the top handle as she stepped into the room. She jumped as he slid it smoothly down her arms and lifted it away from her. But he ignored the nervous reaction, hanging her bag up by the door and wordlessly motioning to the piano. The practice room was actually quite large, with soundproof walls and racks of instruments. The grand piano was toward the back, centered on a small stage. The room seemed too bright, but maybe it was West's presence making her sensitive. For a guy his size, he moved completely without sound, with barely even a brush of his black shoes against the carpet. It made her breathing seem absurdly loud, like a nervous rattle on the exhale, to bounce against the walls and a dry rasp of an inhale that made her sound like she was hyperventilating.
"Which do you prefer, Carter or Isabel?"
West was standing behind her, his presence swelling even larger now that he was out of sight. She parted her lips, but only a squeak came out, her mind stalling around his scent. It was a smoky and woody vanilla, with hints of bourbon and oak. It was so rich, so strong, it immediately sent her thoughts scattering, her own name rattling around her brain like an empty echo.
"Isabel,"
she eventually forced out, wishing she could shake her head to dislodge her reaction.
The only alpha who was able to bowl her over simply with his presence was her father, and that wasn't a good comparison. Maybe it came with age. Maybe all alphas grew stronger, their power more potent over time.
Play whatever you like.
If West was moving, shifting, pacing, anything, then he was doing it in complete silence.
I'd like to watch and listen for today.
That sounded like a worst-case scenario for her first lesson. She lifted her hands to the keys, her face heating in a fierce blush when she realized just how badly her fingers were shaking. And just like when he asked about her name, she came up against another wall, her body refusing to cooperate. Her fingers curled in on themselves.
What is it?
He asked. I... She trailed off, staring at the keys.
Did I ask you to stop?
She shook off the memory, the disjointed voice, but it swayed back, reforming like smoke despite her desperate swatting.
You don't stop until I say so,
her father growled, his hands wrapping around her neck as he bent her head down, inches away from the keys. The dark emotion pouring through him and into her, making a whimper catch in the back of her throat. Oh, honey. That had been her mother, who was now standing beside the piano, staring down at her with sorrowful eyes. You remember that? Jesus fucking Christ. She tried to force it all away, the memory and her mother. West was waiting. Not saying a word, not making a sound. But she could feel the weight of his eyes on the back of her head, and somehow she could even smell the change in his scent. It turned sweeter, smokier, like burning sugar. She wasn't sure how she knew, but it wasn't a good sign. She swallowed and tried again, her eyes starting to burn from her holding her attention too hard on the keys. I haven't played in a while. She finally got the words out and felt a small swell of victory that was dashed as quickly as it appeared.
Why not?
The memory resurfaced with a vengeance, pushing back so forcefully against her feeble attempts to subdue it. She heard the same disjointed chords that liked to haunt her when she let her guard down. She felt the keys like rough bricks, her sensitive fingers grasping desperately, and she felt the grip around her neck tighten.
Bron, no!
Her mother had woken up, and she was crawling toward them, clawing at her husband's pants, his shoes, patting weakly for his attention. She would have opened herself to him. She would have taken it all away. But she had already been used, filled with darkness and emptied of power. She was useless.
You'll kill her. You promised. Bron, you promised. You promised.
It was a broken song to accompany the trailing chords Isabel's fingers stumbled over, the sounds turning loud and frightened, clanging calls for help as the storm inside her grew heavier, forming serrated edges to carve out more room as her father squeezed and squeezed and...
Isabel!
It was a snap, a command. Her eyes flickered open, her breath rasping as she turned her head toward West, who had moved to her side, his eyes digging into her face. Yellow, amber, sharp and translucent, the pupil contracted to a pinpoint.
Breathe in, he commanded.
His voice wasn't gentle, but deep, with a cold undertone. But her body obeyed him anyway, sucking in a lungful of air like she was starved for it.
Hold,
he clipped, waiting and watching.
Release it. Again.
He watched as she breathed, observing the color that leaked back into her ashen cheeks. She was sure she was bright with shame.
I'm adding another lesson,
he eventually said, studying her carefully.
Same time, but on Tuesdays. Elijah Reed will take over this session. Is that okay?
She cleared her croaky throat, fighting back questions like, are you even allowed to do that? And, more importantly, why? I guess.
Professor,
he supplied, his voice deepening. Yes, Professor, she quickly corrected.
Good.
He stepped away, walking to the door.
We're done for today.
Her heart sank low into her gut as she dragged herself toward the library. She had been given an opportunity most students would kill for, and she felt like she had already blown it just because of her stupid piano-related panic. She huffed out a frustrated sound and walked a little faster. But instead of her sneakers hitting the brick pathway, they landed hard against a stone floor, the world around her rearranging in a split second, light flashing across her eyelids like she had accidentally looked up into a sunbeam. She was standing on the rooftop of Dorm A. Her hands started to shake, and she shot a hand out to the kitchen counter, leaning against it as she tried to calm her racing heartbeat.
Why are you scared?
Her mother's voice asked, concern lining her words.
Isabel lost the battle with her racing heart, raising her eyes to the apparition attached to the voice.
Her mother stood beside the kitchen, midday sunlight slanting over her blonde locks. She was dressed in that familiar silken pajama set, with a sky-blue robe knotted at her waist, her feet bare. Now that Isabel thought about it, it was how she had been dressed back in the family center as well.
Mama?
She croaked.
What's happening? Oh, sweetheart.
The older woman looked heartbroken.
Tell me why you're so scared.
I just appeared here, and so did you. Isabel tried to wrangle control of her voice, but it was too late. Someone had heard her. She could hear footsteps on the stairs leading up to the kitchen. She spun to face whichever Alpha was about to accost her for breaking into the dorm in the middle of the day. Her chest was rising and falling too fast, but at least she managed to stop her breath from rasping, and she was pretty sure she didn't have a wide-eyed look of shock plastered all over her face anymore. It was Reed who appeared, pausing at the top of the staircase and blinking twice. It was probably the most shock Reed ever displayed. She got the feeling he wasn't often surprised by things, just like Spade.
What are you doing here?
He asked. He didn't glance at her mother. She checked over her shoulder. The apparition was still there.
I don't know, she admitted. I just appeared here. What are you doing here?
He looked mildly amused at her question before he shook his head. Reed and Spade didn't always attend their classes, like Sato and Moses, who she desperately hoped weren't also downstairs.
It's a side effect of an incomplete mate bond,
he said, stepping fully into the kitchen. He seemed to be about to say something else, but that light slanted over her vision again, temporarily blinding her as the ground seemed to simultaneously drop out from beneath her feet and rise up to meet her at the same time. She tumbled over this time, sprawling out against the brick path outside the music department. Her mother didn't appear again, but her phone began vibrating, and she quickly found her feet, glancing at the unsaved number before answering.
Carter,
a brisk female voice greeted.
This is Bauer from the on-site surveillance center.
An official?
Where did you just disappear to?
Her mind began to race, her palm growing clammy around the phone. The cameras on the rooftop didn't cover the kitchen. There was no way they would have seen her appear in Dorm A.
To the place of my accident,
she answered, trying not to lie. Bauer sighed.
We were afraid of that.
Afraid of what, ma'am?
She dared to ask. Most officials would have hung up on her, but Bauer seemed distracted, mumbling to someone nearby before coming back to answer Isabel, her tone still preoccupied. that your side effects wouldn't point to anyone in particular. And then she hung up. Isabel shoved her phone back into the pocket of her tights and stood there in shock, debating where to go before deciding to just wait in the dining hall for Ashford. It was unnerving that the officials were keeping such a close eye on her. But it wasn't entirely surprising. She had to be careful, especially if she was going to keep teleporting back to the spot where she died, like the mate Bond was trying to make sense of this as much as she was. The cameras weren't going to miss a thing when it came to her, and with her father close enough to get his hands on her. Well, it was enough to keep her up at night. In her own room. Since she arrived before the lunch crowd, she was able to steal one of the booths. At first, she didn't have much of an appetite, but then a wave of hunger suddenly tunneled through her stomach like it was completely hollow. She started mindlessly piling up her tray, texting Ashford with one hand on the way back to the booth. She deposited the tray and then ducked back out again. He must have skipped class because he found her as she was making them coffee.
"For me?"
he asked, tapping against the table, his finger lifting to point at the cup she had just added several shots to. She didn't bother asking how he knew. Alpha knows. "Yep." She made sure the lids were on securely before she swiped hers up, leading the way to the booth she had left her food in. He didn't get any food himself, and he seemed to pause over her overfull tray when he slid into the booth seat opposite her.
"Hungry?"
he asked, leaning back and settling curious eyes on her.
"Starving," she moaned, offloading the dishes from her tray and arranging them on the table.
She didn't remember picking up the small bowl of pickles. She hated pickles.
Kian had waited for her to come to him, to explain herself. He tried to be patient, to not push her, to not overcomplicate a very complicated situation. But he couldn't let it go.
"What you said on the roof of the library."
He started to dive right into it, but the Sigma was frowning at a bowl of pickles like she wasn't even listening. She picked one of them up and nibbled on the edge of it. He cleared his throat, sitting up and leaning over the table. Her eyes snapped straight to his, the pickle dropping from her fingers and bouncing against the table. Those eyes were a straight kick to his gut, both the honey-colored one that matched his own hidden iris, and also the multicolored one. He could see specks of sapphire, like fine glittering dust sprinkled throughout the other colors.
"What?" she asked, shaking her head. "I'm sorry, I'm not right today."
"What happened?"
he asked, careful not to sound too curious. She was frowning, munching on a new pickle distractedly.
"I teleported."
"You what?"
It was getting harder to keep his tone neutral. She suddenly made a face, throwing down the pickle and making a retching sound. She wiped her hands on a napkin and put the bowl as far away as she could. When she refocused on the dishes in front of her, he pushed it further, to the edge of the table.
"Teleported,"
she reiterated, almost calmly, starting to rearrange the dishes in front of her. She was separating them with a frown, mumbling beneath her breath. He thought he heard the word vegetarian, and when he focused, he could see that she was eliminating everything with meat in it. He reached across the table, catching her hands. Her eyes flicked to his again, punched into him again, and he forced her palms to the table, weighing them down with his own. He dwarfed them.
"Where did you teleport to?"
he asked evenly.
"To..."
she cut herself off immediately, before trying again.
"To where I almost died. Pretty much the exact same spot."
Her hands were shaking. He traced along the length of her thumb with his, and the shaking grew worse.
"Was anyone there, Isabel?"
Her eyes had started to wander to the food again, that confused glint sparking, but they shot back to him at the sound of her name on his lips. She shook her head, slipping her hands out from beneath his, and leaned back in her seat, crossing her arms.
"Please come here,"
she spoke on an expelled breath, nervously. She looked toward the seat beside her.
"I don't want to be overheard."
He obligingly slid out of the booth and switched to the other side, stretching his legs out beneath the table. His new vantage point showed him the rest of the hall, and he could see students beginning to filter in for lunch. He turned slightly, setting his arm against the table. She was making herself small, hunching in her shoulders. She smelled harassed, like crushed cherries and branches shoved through a wood chipper. He breathed deeply, curling himself around her, keeping his fucking hands to himself. "Tell me," he cajoled, because even though he was keeping his hands to himself, his voice hadn't received the memo, and it was trying to persuade her to come closer, where he could scent her better. Isabel wrapped her arms around her middle, her attention skittering up the expansive chest that was closer than she had intended. Still, it was better that the cameras didn't overhear this conversation. She leaned in, refusing to look Ashford in the eyes, and spoke against his shirt, her voice a whisper.
"I heard a voice in my head."
"Mm-hmm." His chest rumbled with the sound, but he didn't say anything else, waiting for her to continue. As close as she was, she could smell a curious mix of scents on Ashford. If sunlight had a scent, it was exactly the perfume that clung to his dusky skin. He was heat and warmth and the rush of salty seawater. She closed her eyes, distracted for a moment by the heavenly mix. "What is that smell?" she found herself asking, drawing back so that her eyes could crawl up to his face.
"You're so distracted,"
he noted with a frown, his hand lifting like he was about to touch her face, before quickly dropping down again. But he did touch her. His palm settled across her thigh beneath the table, searing hot, his fingers flexing.
"What smell?"
"Like the ocean."
His touch turned pinching, his eyes narrowing.
"Me."
The word was quiet and clipped, but he didn't seem angry. He looked surprised, confused.
"Focus, Sigma. What did the voice say on the rooftop of the library?"
"That she was sorry."
His touch slackened, his aquamarine eyes widening.
"She? Did you know the voice?"
"Never heard it before."
Isabel shrugged a little. Ashford ducked closer, refusing to let her turn away.
"Is it the only one you hear?"
he whispered harshly. Isabel's lips flattened, but she was saved from a reply when the half-closed screen was suddenly pushed back, Nico appearing in the opening.
"There you are,"
he said to Ashford, ignoring Isabel completely. "We were waiting for you back at the dorm.
I'm fucking starving. Are you going to eat all of this?"
He reached for one of the pickles, biting off half of it at once.
"It's not mine,"
Ashford said, easing back from her. He returned to his previous seat, looking completely unaffected by their tense conversation.
"Help yourself," Isabel mumbled.
Nico sat beside Ashford, digging in without being told twice. It was like she had collected all of his favorite foods and arranged them there to wait for him, if the speed of his eating and the sounds he made at each new dish were anything to go by. Ashford sat calmly in the corner, one arm resting on the table, the other stretched along the top of the back seat. He was smirking at Nico. She started to edge out of the booth, but Reed suddenly appeared, blocking her in. He jerked his chin for her to make room for him, and the look on his face was impatient, so she sighed, shuffling back until she was in the other corner opposite Ashford.
"Keep going," Reed said. "There are more coming."
"I'll just..."
She made like she was about to try and climb out of the booth again, but suddenly Ashford was behind her, his hands at her waist, dragging her across the back seat until she was beside him again. Reed edged around the table to sit on her other side, boxing her in. Spade sat beside him, and then Theodore appeared with a tray. His nose wrinkled, and his eyes flew straight to her, and then to the alphas trapping her in. They were facing off with each other like a challenge had been issued, and it wasn't until Theodore flashed her his beautiful smile and sat beside Nico that everyone relaxed. Ashford reached over the table and snatched the sandwich that she had chosen amongst all the dishes she had collected in a haze. It was the only thing she actually felt like eating after the strange, ravenous hunger had disappeared. She tried to mumble her thanks, but then Moses appeared with a dark frown directed her way, and the word died in the back of her throat. She busied herself eating the sandwich, taking tiny little bites so that she could drag it out until they all left the booth. When Killian appeared, he looked displeased to see her imprisoned between Reed and Ashford, and he exchanged an unreadable look with Theodore before slotting in on his other side. It wasn't until everyone was deep into a heated conversation about what they were going to do for Ashford's birthday party that she felt another touch against her leg. Except this time, it wasn't Ashford's searing touch. It was a light tap just above her knee. Reed was watching her. He bent beside her ear once he had her attention, whispering low. "Is that the first time it's happened?" She nodded. He made a slight humming sound. "Do you know why? Why there?" She shrugged, her shoulders shifting against his and Ashford's arms. "Because it's where I almost died?"
"You did die," Reed corrected automatically. "A bond cannot begin without the heart stopping, or without the soul disconnecting with the body, depending on whether you buy into the gifted religion or not."
"Do you?" She set down her sandwich, unable to ignore the uneasy feeling inside her stomach. She almost wished the urge to consume meat and pickles was back. Reed tapped her plate like he was tapping her leg.
"Finish it."
The command was quiet, but he didn't use his alpha voice.
"You need your strength."
"You need to mind your own business," she shot back, a little too loud. The alphas weren't talking anymore. They were watching her and Reed. Well, except for Nico. He was still eating, shoveling food in like he wasn't going to get a chance to eat. Ever again.
"You're pale and shaky," Reed noted dispassionately. "You've been skipping meals and throwing out half-finished protein bars after your practice sessions."
"I almost died." She spoke to the table, her tone droll. "I'm stressed. My father is here." "And how have you noticed all that anyway? We're not even friends."
"We could be."
Theodore spat water all over the table.
"No."
He set his bottle down with a little too much force.
"She already has me." "And me."
Killian rolled his eyes at Theodore.
"Yeah,"
Theodore gritted out.
"Like I said."
Reed ignored them both, watching her evenly, like he had been all week, apparently.
"You don't want to be friends with me."
She pushed her plate further away.
Reed didn't try to correct her.
She was right.
"Let me out."
She stood, wishing she could use alpha voice, but apparently she didn't need it, because Theodore stood and bodily dragged everyone out of her way.
"Thanks,"
she muttered to him, biting back a small smile as she stepped from the booth, hanging her bag over her shoulder. Nobody tried to fight off Theodore. They liked him too much. They just tagged his shoulders lightly with their fists and then reclaimed their seats after Isabel was free. Theodore remained standing, looking down at her like he already knew what she was about to say.
"See you tomorrow,"
she started. He was already shaking his head.
"They put a bomb in your room, Illy."
"There's a camera."
She flicked a look to Reed, who only arched an impassive brow in response.
"Watch me sleep if you have to."
And then she turned on her heel and tried to stalk off, but Reed's voice caught her before she was out of earshot. His alpha voice.
Grab a protein bar on your way out.
She frowned as she passed the snack station by the coffee cart, snatching up one of the bars. He hadn't ordered her to eat it. But she did find that asserting a small amount of power and stubbornness over the alphas had given her back a hint of her appetite. So she ate half of it and threw out the other half on her way to class, just to spite Reed.
Chapter 7. Rebel Like That. Isabel checked her emails for the code to the elevator as she stepped into the family center, punching it into the panel and hitting the button for the 8th floor. She had showered and changed into one of the dresses her father approved of for dinner time, and selfishly wished her mother's apparition would appear to walk with her as she knocked on his apartment door. But her mother had acted as a barrier for most of her adult life. It was cruel to continue to wish it even after her death.
Isabel.
Her father opened the door, motioning her in, all business.
We're already set up and ready to go. You'll find your outfit changes behind the screen over there. I'll let your new publicist take it from here.
And then he was walking away. He didn't even notice the dress.
Miss Carter!
The man who appeared before her was slim, with a black goatee and neatly combed hair trimmed short and immaculate. He had reading glasses tucked into his pressed white shirt and an iPad wedged beneath his arm. He stuck the other one out for her to shake. His grip was firm, like he was trying to impress her.
Beautiful,
he muttered, like she was a doll on display.
The screen barely does you justice, but we'll fix that. I'm Cesar Cooper, your publicist for the time being.
She extracted her hand from his. Nice to meet you.
Of course.
His hand was at her back now, steering her through the packed apartment as stylists and photographers bustled about, rearranging the furniture and testing out their lights. He hovered a little too close, like he had also taken it upon himself to be her bodyguard.
Now, it was decided that we would do a Sigma theme for your photo shoot this afternoon.
The rest of his sentence was lost on her, as she caught sight of the rack of clothing one of the stylists was flipping through.
Sigma theme?
She questioned once he finished talking, a ball of lead dropping through her stomach.
Yes, yes, you know.
He deposited her behind the dressing screen, holding the outfit she had caught sight of around the edge as he looked away. He waved it about.
This one first. Hurry now, we're on a tight schedule. You have practice in 2 hours, and Carter is adamant that we don't interfere with your training time.
It was a maid costume. She took it with bile building in the back of her throat, holding it up to look it over. It was small. She was used to wearing barely anything while she practiced and trained, but this seemed different somehow. The fishnet stockings, the frilly skirt that bounced right out almost like a ballerina skirt. The entire length of her legs would be on show, not to mention the deep, plunging neckline and scant material.
Can I speak to my father, please?
Cooper popped around to her side of the screen, making her jump a few inches back. He arranged a look of commiseration onto his face.
Something wrong?
He pulled out his phone, waiting for her to reply like a fix was only a call away, and she was suddenly filled with familiar memories of past tutors threatening to tell her father if she didn't cooperate.
Has my father approved the photo shoot?
She tried for a different tact.
I just want to make sure.
Your father approved everything.
He was frowning now, his fingers twitching around the phone. But then he slid it away, drawing closer to her, lowering his voice in a conspiratorial whisper.
Are you sure you want me to bring him back in? You know what he's like.
His hand slid down her arm as though he was trying to comfort her.
No need.
She gritted her teeth. I'll get changed.
Excellent.
He squeezed her arm and ducked back around the other side of the screen. She turned around and stared at her very clear reflection in the glass window behind the screen. Nobody else seemed to be watching, but it was just another low blow that her privacy screen wasn't private at all. She quickly stripped off her dress and stuffed herself into the costume. She left the fishnets behind, even though they probably would have helped to cover her legs a little more. The apron layered over the front of the dress turned out to have adjustable straps, so she was able to pull it up over half of her chest. The result almost looked like a ballerina costume. A weird one, but the tight bodice, high neckline, and short, flared skirt was familiar enough. Killian didn't like the publicist immediately, but when he handed Isabel that costume, Killian wanted to rip off his hands and bitch-slap them with his own broken stubs. Unfortunately, Killian didn't agree with violence as a first solution, and he wasn't even supposed to be there, so instead, he tipped the iPad out of Cooper's pocket when the asshole turned around to watch Isabel's reflection in the glass wall, just as she started unzipping her dress. Cooper swore, bending to check that the screen wasn't broken, and Killian flattened himself to the wall, wondering what the fuck he was going to do. Trip the fire alarm? Start an actual fire? Whatever was going on here, it was none of his business. This was some weird Icon family shit. "Oh, love it!" One of the stylists grabbed Isabel as she emerged, saving her from Cooper's permeating frown. Killian trailed her as she was whisked through hair and makeup and positioned before the cameras, all the staff acting like they were being timed. "Here!" A feather duster was shoved into Isabel's hand, and Killian gritted his teeth so hard they were in danger of cracking. Not a single person in the room had a ranking ring around their pupil, which meant they were all human. And if the world had taught humans anything, it was that the gifted were either icons or they were nothing. None of these humans seemed to care about Isabel, because she wasn't an icon. They did care about Braun Carter, but the burly man had disappeared almost as soon as his daughter arrived. Killian stepped over a bundle of cords, moving to the other wall where he could have a clear view of Isabel. They were instructing her to pose like a ballerina as she pretended to dust the curtains. It was supposed to be alluring. She was supposed to be the perfect Stepford Sigma. But she just looked like a trapped, broken ballerina. She ruined the whole shoot, and Killian was overjoyed by the frowns of the photographers. When they made her smile, she somehow looked sadder. "Okay, we can work with this," the publicist was muttering, pacing behind the cameras and looking like someone had pissed in his coffee. Except Killian doubted it was coffee in the flask he took a quick swig out of. "We change the tone of the campaign, make it look like she's waiting for someone to rescue her." "So that she can do their chores?" one of the stylists muttered, shaking her head. She looked amused, but also a little disgusted, and more than a little, defeated. This likely wasn't the industry for her. "Next outfit," Cooper shouted, clapping his hands. "Hustle, people!" Isabel ducked back behind the screen, and Killian quickly wrapped one of the cords into a circle on the floor, waiting until Cooper stepped into it on his way over to spy on Isabel again. And then he pulled, and the asshole face planted, almost impaling himself on a camera stand. It was beautiful, but not nearly gruesome enough. When she emerged again, she was wearing a wedding dress, and Killian slackened back against the wall, rubbing a hand over his mouth. Layered in thin, delicate ivory silk, she looked like she was floating on a cloud, intricate beading and embroidery climbing across the bodice and drawing all of his attention to the pale swell of her cleavage, her chest flushed with agitation. Her hair tumbled freely, a simple wreath of delicate flowers tucked onto her head. Her cheeks were rosy, her makeup silver and glittery, her eyes watering. This was so fucked up. He pulled out his phone and took a picture, sending it to the group chat. The responses were immediate. Theodore, what the fuck? Kian,
where the fuck?
Gabriel,
family center. Somewhere around the top floor if the view is anything to go by.
Gabriel,
the why is less obvious.
Elijah,
seriously? It's clearly a photo shoot. Her father is an icon with a penchant for aggressive media campaigns. He will see her partly bonded status as an opportunity.
Gabriel,
I said it was less obvious, not that it wasn't still obvious.
Moses,
stop comparing brain size.
Killian,
yeah, stop waving your big brains around.
Theodore,
an opportunity to what? To marry her off?
Gabriel,
an opportunity for attention. He might be thinking she could win the game, especially if he can drag this out.
Nico,
you mean if we can drag this out?
Oscar,
hey, Kill, come and get me.
Admin, Mikkel.
Don't get involved, Oscar.
Oscar,
you know you want to, Killy.
Admin, Kaylin.
Do not get involved, Oscar.
Elijah.
Oscar, don't.
Oscar.
Be there in 10, Killjoy.
Killian glanced back up at the miserable look on Isabel's face and realized it wasn't really that hard of a decision. He began edging toward the doorway. Isabel dragged herself behind the dressing screen again, glaring at the third outfit Cooper passed behind the screen.
We should shoot her sitting on the windowsill or something, looking out with that sad look on her face.
He strode off, talking to one of the photographers, some of his words drifting back to her.
Daydreaming about her mate.
She quickly slipped on the silk nightie and dressing gown, shoving her feet into the silken slippers while angrily knotting the sash around her waist. She was too busy trying to get dressed as quickly as possible to realize exactly what she was putting on. And it wasn't until they were directing her onto the balcony that she realized what they had inadvertently done. They had dressed her as her mother. Had her father picked this because he thought all Sigmas were the same? She stared down, suddenly deaf to the people around her, her fingers rubbing against the lustrous material. She would always find her mother like this in the middle of the night, out on the balcony, contemplating the fall, contemplating her choices, weighing up whether she could bear to leave Isabel or not, most likely. It was hard to admit that, hard to face that. When it was all she knew, it was almost normal. But she had been away from that penthouse long enough now that none of it looked normal anymore.
I'm done,
she croaked, stepping off the balcony. Cooper was getting in her face, but she tuned him out, glancing away from his twitching goatee. She snatched a coat from the rack of clothing and ducked behind the useless screen to hastily swap out the dressing gown for the coat, clutching it closed at her throat as she shoved her feet into her shoes and tried to leave the room. She might have made it, too, if her father hadn't returned at that moment.
Everyone out!
He bellowed, gripping her arm and preventing her from going any further. He didn't use alpha voice. They were humans, after all. He might have been a fully fledged citizen, but he had his own set of rules, and using his abilities on humans could land him in jail, icon or not. Still, they scattered like they believed he would do something terrible to them. Like they had been the ones to let him down. Like they would be punished after he finished dealing with her. Once the room was clear, he gripped her other arm, drawing her up as he bore down on her.
Have you forgotten your place, daughter?
His fury battered against her chest with heavy fists, forcing her to crack in increments until his poison could begin to leak in. He was the only one who could overpower her in this way. But he hadn't had much reason to do it, with her mother alive. She started to grow weak as his heavy emotion flooded into her. He always had so much rage, so much bitterness, so much hollow darkness just searching for a bad emotion to latch onto. He shook her a few times, her teeth snapping together, like he was settling it all into her system, jostling it into place, making room for more. He waited until he heard her hiss of pain, and then he set her down, leaving her to rub the bruises already forming on her arms. And then something changed. It was almost imperceptible, but she felt it. It was a strange shift in the tension, like something had been added. A breeze from a window that had been sealed shut. He frowned, realizing his phone had been vibrating, and she edged away as he answered the call, her eyes flicking between the door and the carpet. She wanted to flee, but that would only make things worse.
"And what's this?"
an unfamiliar voice asked. She jumped at the sound that sprouted inside her head, spinning to find a man standing a few feet away. He had endless black eyes and was heavy-set, with a fierce, broad brow and tightly curled hair. And he was staring straight at her, a gold alpha ring wrapped around onyx pupils. "Crap," she muttered, when her mother appeared right beside him, flicking her curious attention between them.
"Who's this?"
her mother asked.
"Double crap."
Isabel turned away from them, though it made the hair on the back of her neck stand on end to put the man out of her sights. Her father was cursing into his phone, his face reddening, his pacing taking on a violent edge. He had been mad before, but this was something else. This was the sort of thing she really should run from. She needed to wait for whatever bad news he had just gotten to pass before she tried to face him again. Or she would end up with more than just bruises. That deep, crooning voice behind her drifted along the back of her neck.
"He's invisible."
"Who are you talking about?"
her mother questioned.
"My little wolf,"
the man replied, striding past Isabel like he didn't give a shit about her, even though she was pretty sure he was a figment of her imagination. Not even her own psychotic creations respected her. He moved to the wall right beside the door and slammed his fist against it, growling when he couldn't seem to get a grip of anything.
"Think you're untouchable now, do you, little fuck?"
he seethed.
"What the hell is he doing?"
Isabel hissed out of the side of her mouth as her mother moved to stand beside her.
"He's trying to grab that boy by the throat."
"What boy?" Isabel froze, her eyes slamming into her mother.
"A boy like me, or a boy like you?"
Her mother smiled sadly.
"You mean, is he alive?"
"He is. He's just invisible."
"Great. Now the ghosts she kept accidentally materializing were trying to attack her only other alpha friend."
She ran to the door as her father spun around to pace back to the wall of windows. After flinging the door open, she glanced at the spot on the wall the man was now starting to pound against with fists that couldn't seem to catch anything, spittle flying from the edges of his mouth as the curses died away to grunts and growls.
"Get out,"
she whispered, hoping Killian heard her. She ran to the elevator, slamming her finger into the button as the man with dark eyes chased her, both he and her mother disappearing as the elevator jolted into action. She rested her head against the wall, trying to calm her racing pulse.
"Killian?"
she whispered.
"Not just him,"
a gritty voice whispered back, close to her ear. She spun around, clutching the handrail in the elevator, her wide eyes traveling between a suddenly visible Killian and Sado.
"Does your father always touch you like that?"
Sato asked in that quiet, dangerous tone. Is it any of your business? She shook out her hands, which were tingling too much, the shock trying to take hold of her body. Killian was considering her carefully, a disturbed look on his face.
Yes,
Sato answered plainly. She waited for him to elaborate. He didn't.
How?
She drew out the word, her exasperation clear. How is any of this your business? Why were you both following me? I've been out of the hospital for days. If I was going to tell anyone the truth about where my accident happened, I would have.
How did you know we were there?
Killian asked, drawing her attention from Sato's impassive expression.
You looked right at us.
Ah, she was back to playing the answer all questions with more questions game with the alphas. Are you Little Wolf? She lifted a brow at Killian, who only looked confused. The elevator doors opened, and she and Killian stepped out, but Sato remained. Killian quickly shot out his hand, holding the doors open, his eyes flicking between Sato and Isabel, because Sato looked like someone had just shot him in the chest at close range, which for anyone else looked more like a little put off.
What did you say?
He whispered, his voice cracking. So it was you. She watched as he slowly started to walk toward her. She edged backwards, and Killian monitored them warily, hovering close by like he thought he would be required to intervene at any moment. She held up her hands when Sato got too close, but he only pushed into her, her hands slipping against his chest, her butt hitting a chair behind her.
Where did you hear that name?
He asked quietly, his chest rising and falling evenly against her palms. He seemed so contained, full of self-control, but there was something off about the facade, like it was a trap. Someone told me, she hedged. If it had just been Killian, she might have confided in him. But admitting to Sato that she heard voices and saw apparitions of people who were dead, or made up, or something, was not on the cards.
Who?
He was so close, his hands gripping the top of the chair he had backed her into, caging her in. He was leaning down, trapping her in the glittering, angry darkness of his eyes.
That's enough.
Killian pulled him back, and they faced off as a snarl ripped out of Sato's throat.
Get out of here!
Killian delivered the order in alpha voice, and she didn't have to wait for very long to guess who he had issued it to. Her feet were already moving her to the door. She fled the family center, strangely glad to be back under the watchful eye of the cameras again, until she realized she was still only wearing the stupid silk slip beneath her coat. And she was late for the practice time she had booked. For all the bravado she had shown at lunchtime, she was hesitant when she finished catching up on the Ironside show with Eve that night and shuffled back to her room. She checked that her door was locked properly several times and even shifted a pile of books in front of it for good measure. It wouldn't keep anyone out if they busted the lock, but it would make a sound when it toppled over. She sat on her makeshift bed, hugging her knees to her chest and staring at the blank wall she had gone to all the trouble of trying to decorate when she had arrived at Ironside. Since her room had been trashed the first time, she had started treating it less like her room and more like the storage closet it was initially intended as. It was just a transient place, somewhere for her to store her stuff until she managed to force her way into Dorm A. She slept with the light on that night, fully dressed, unable to succumb to the vulnerabilities of darkness or soft, comfortable clothes. If it hadn't been for the camera watching over her, she might not have dared to sleep at all.
Nice to see you again, Carter.
Annalise Teak stood aside, motioning her into the small meeting room within the family center.
This is my partner, Charlie.
Isabel offered both women a small smile, moving to the bright yellow armchair that sat facing them across a small coffee table. Charlie didn't get up to greet her, but offered a warm smile from where she was still seated, her shoes kicked off and her legs crossed in the chair. The silver beta ring around her iris was stark against dark eyes, matching her silver nose ring and eyebrow ring. She had short, dark hair that swept over her face, and more dangling silver piercings stepping up along her earlobes. But other than the piercings and the way she was seated, she seemed to be dressed just as professionally as Teak.
"We grabbed you a coffee,"
Teak said, picking up a takeaway cup from the sideboard by the door and offering it to Isabel.
"Thanks."
Isabel took a sip, not at all surprised that they knew how she liked her coffee. They might have the gifted rank rings around their irises, but Teak was as good as an official.
"So, you've been going to all your classes?"
Teak folded into her own chair, sounding impressed.
"You only took a day off to clean your room. I'm sorry about that, by the way."
"Why? Did you do it?" Isabel snapped her lips shut, wanting to palm her face immediately. Just because Teak and Charlie looked approachable, just because Teak also had a Sigma ring, didn't mean anything. Teak likely held Isabel's future in her hands. These sessions weren't just for Isabel. They were a way to monitor her, to assess her, to experiment with her experience. She wouldn't have expected anything less from the officials. She had actually expected more. Charlie smirked.
"Don't look so scared. This is a safe space."
"So you won't be reporting back everything I say?"
Isabel challenged. Teak clicked her tongue in a disapproving sound.
"I'm a bond specialist, Isabel. Do you mind if I call you Isabel?"
She waited for Isabel to shake her head before she continued.
"I serve dual roles. To support any student who has initiated a mate bond, and to keep the officials informed of every minute step of the process. I won't be reporting on what you say unless it directly affects your bonding process."
"You're her first, though,"
Charlie added, winking, "so she already has a soft spot for you."
"And possibly my last,"
Teak smiled slightly,
"since it's so rare."
She opened up the cover on her iPad, checking something on the screen before looking up at Isabel again.
"You teleported yesterday and appeared at the scene of your death?"
"Yes. It wasn't for long."
"And you were alone? There was nobody there?"
"Did her mother count?"
She hesitated.
"No."
They shared a look before Teak put aside her iPad. She seemed to carefully consider her words before she spoke again.
"What you're going through must be terrifying. You don't seem very eager to find your mate. Why don't you tell me about that?"
Isabel tipped her head back against the chair, setting her coffee aside as her stomach clenched painfully. She wrapped her arms around her middle and thought about her father. Was he in the building? Would he punish her for what had happened the day before? Had he calmed down? Suddenly, tears filled her eyes, and she hastily swiped them away, clearing her throat.
"Since I came to Ironside, I've been able to decide things for myself. What I eat, when I sleep, whether I watch the show or not."
For a moment, neither of them seemed to know what to say. But then Charlie tilted her head, speaking in a curious tone.
"Most people find Ironside to be quite restrictive. There might be more luxury here, but there are less rules in the settlements, less eyes on you. What else can you do here that you couldn't do before?"
"Sleep through the night,"
Isabel admitted quietly.
"Even with people trashing my room and rigging booby traps for me, it's easier here."
"And what makes you think that a mate will take those things away from you?"
Teak asked carefully, like she knew she was tiptoeing around a subject that could shut Isabel off at any second.
I'll belong to whoever it is. Isabel glanced between the women apologetically, not wanting to offend them. I won't be in charge of myself anymore.
Why do you think that?
Teek asked, sharing another look with Charlie.
You don't have to worry about upsetting us.
Isabel shrugged.
You have some sort of file on me, right?
Teek straightened up again, patience written into the soft expression on her face.
Of course.
I bet it's extensive. Charlie snorted. Teek shot her a quick look of chastisement that still somehow managed to look soft and loving. Teek was the perfect Sigma. It made Isabel sick to her stomach.
Yes, Teek refocused on Isabel. It's extensive. What happened to my mother?
Teek froze, searching her face.
You were informed by your father in early February?
No, Isabel interrupted. I know she's dead. I want to know what happened exactly. I've searched online. It wasn't reported on or announced to the public at all.
Teek's eyes turned briefly sharp, like something was clicking together in her mind as she watched Isabel fidget in her seat. I was told your father is staying here in the family center to better support you, and that you would be meeting with him every afternoon for the foreseeable future. Are you not comfortable speaking to him about it?
She asked plainly.
I don't know what comfortable feels like.
Isabel issued the information almost like a challenge to the women across from her.
Not around my father.
To her credit, Teek didn't even bat an eyelash.
Understood. I'll find out what I can. How does that sound?
There isn't any information about it in my file?
No.
Teek still had a sharp, considering look in her eyes.
Your parents lived the lives of an icon and his mate. The OGGB didn't attend your mother's death. The human police force did.
But the OGGB knows everything, Isabel persisted. It made her nervous that they were using the formal acronym for the official gifted governing body instead of just saying the officials. It was like she was already chained to a desk in an interrogation room, a group of humans in suits on the other side of one-way glass, wondering why she was questioning things she had no right questioning. The way things worked was not a topic up for discussion. That was what anti-loyalists did. They questioned things.
Have you had any other side effects?
Teek suddenly steered the conversation away from her mother.
Anything strange, different, out of the ordinary?
Just weird cravings? And seeing dead people.
Any cold or flu symptoms? Sudden depression or feelings of hopelessness?
Teek was tapping away on her iPad.
Some headaches, chest pains, and mood changes, I guess.
It took the rest of the hour to answer all of Teek's questions, but Isabel was surprised when Teek suddenly changed the subject again, right as Isabel was getting up to leave.
I'll dig into what happened to your mother.
She was avoiding eye contact as she packed up her things.
And Charlie is going to give you her number, in case of emergencies.
I am?
Charlie asked, at the same time as Isabel said, She is?
Yes, of course.
Teek brushed them both off, still busying herself with stuffing her iPad into her bag. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to give mine out. I'm here for the sessions the officials have appointed, and nothing more. Charlie suddenly got up, holding out her hand for Isabel's phone.
I'm a rebel like that.
She rolled her dark eyes. Always doing things behind my mate's back. Teek snorted softly, but still refused to turn around. Isabel hesitantly handed her phone over, and then took it back once Charlie was finished with it. She thanked them both, slipping out of the room, and hurried to lunch before she could run into her father. Chapter 8. Tossing and Spinning. Isabel slumped back into her chair, dropping the polished cutlery as the credits for the latest Ironside episode aired. She was seated at an 8-person dining table in the penthouse apartment with her father, his assistant, his agent, his marketing manager, and Cooper. They all muttered quietly and took notes as the episode played, while her father just sat there, staring stoically at the projected screen. After skipping her scheduled meeting with him the day before, he had finally summoned her on Friday morning with a curt email.
Isabel, as you know, you earn a monthly stipend during your time at Ironside. My financial advisor has been putting these amounts aside for you into a fund to be accessed when you graduate. Every time you disobey me or fail to attend our scheduled meetings, I will deduct money from that account. Your absence last night cost you 3 months of your salary. Do not let it happen again. I will see you at 6 p.m. tonight. We will watch the show together. Regards, your father.
So there she was, wishing she could disappear into the floor after watching the one scene she had been dreading. The officials had finally decided to air the footage of her emerging naked from the lake, and time had slowed down, both on screen.